Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and for 30 years, I have been both the CEO of Technology Partners and the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. Before we get started, I'm excited to share that my book, Something Extra, is now available. It is rooted in the remarkable spirit of our daughter, Allie, and the heartfelt conversations we've had on the podcast. You'll find wisdom and practical tools to ignite the leader within you and uncover your own Something Extra. Visit somethingextrabook.com or find it at Amazon or in all major bookstores to order your copy today. I'm grateful to have Bill Tingle on the show today. Bill is the founder and CEO of Tingle Leadership. Well, Bill Tingle, welcome to the Something Extra podcast. I have been looking so forward to spending this time with you because every time I'm with you, I learn something. I feel like I come away having been coached. You've got so much wisdom.
I feel the same. I've been really looking forward to it. I enjoy listening to your podcast and all your amazing guests. And when I think about your guests that have been on your show, I don't feel like I deserve it. It's just such an honor to be, you know, listed among other people and to share my story and however I can help anybody. So thank you so much.
Well, you're a rock star. So literally and figuratively, we'll talk about that. Bill really is a rock star, but in many different ways. So let me ask you this, you know, tell me a little bit about your early life and things from your life, early life that maybe have shaped you as a leader, because you've been a leader for a very long time.
Yeah, I have. And when I was young, so I grew up in the Midwest. My dad was a chemist. He was a scientist. And he was born into a family with two deaf parents. And so he was the oldest child, and he ended up being the leader of the family because, you know, two deaf parents. My grandfather had a very low paying job, and he was really ambitious to go to college and get a degree. And he was very influential early in my life. And one of the early memories I have was with him. He created what would be called a side hustle now. So he created a janitorial business so that in the evenings he could make more money, and he could also give a job to his parents, and they could make actually more money than they were making anywhere else. And very early, I began working with him, and he taught me so many things about leadership. And I didn't realize how much he taught me until I started reflecting later as an adult. But just integrity, quality, what it means to satisfy a customer. You know, he used to come along behind me and check my work, and I just learned so much about that. And I think one of the other things I learned with him was I eventually managed, at a young age, I was managing people, and I was managing people much older than me. And when you're early in your career as an adult and you get into management early, you're going to manage people with a lot more experience. They're further along. And a lot of people struggle with that, managing people that are further along in their career. And that was huge. So that was really helpful in what's shaping me. And then I think as, you know, as I grew up, music, you know, I was always the one leading and pulling people together for music, whether it was like for wedding music or, you know, playing out, you know, publicly. So that really shaped me as well. And then of course, as I got into, I was going to go into music, and I could hear my dad's voice about, you know, engineering and livelihood versus music. And so through his influence, I actually chose to go to engineering school, be an engineer, and enter the corporate world. And but I still have music, and that's one of the things I learned is I'll always have that. But at the end of the day, I'm a leader in technology.
Mm-hmm. I love that story. Wow, we have a little family assistant that works for us, and Bill, she's 21 years old. Both of her parents are deaf, and I'm kidding you not, this girl operates like a 40-year-old. But, you know, she's had to, right? And so mature. But, yeah, I would imagine that that is, I love, though, that creation of the janitorial business.
Yeah. I remember when one of the things that I realized early on was I had this, like, creative, innovative mindset. And I can remember one of the first jobs my dad gave me as a janitor was, and I probably was 12. I mean, legally, I probably shouldn't have been working, but you know, he gave me money and it helped pay for, you know, musical instruments and things. But I remember one of my jobs was to pick up cigarette butts out of the parking lot. And, you know, I was healthy and young and but I got tired of bending over, like, to pick up these cigarette butts. And so I went home and I invented this cigarette picker upper, and I got a broom handle and a nail, and you know, my dad came down and he's like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "I'm going to make my job easier." And he just laughed and he helped me, you know, so we created this contraption and it made it easier. And I actually was able to get a lot more done with it faster. And so, you know, it was probably one of the early, like, you know, I got some creative, innovative, like, spark in me. So we'll see where that goes.
That is so cool. That is so good. Well, I know that you have a BS. You have a bachelor's in engineering. You also have some graduate work from WashU, which we all, if you're from St. Louis, wonderful, wonderful university here in St. Louis. But, you know, what drew you? Because I think you started as a software engineer. Oh, and Bill, this is something we may or may not have talked about, but you started at McDonnell Douglas, yes, in the missile systems.
Same time, probably the same year that you started.
The same year, 1985.
I remember seeing that. I thought, oh my gosh, we were at McDonnell Douglas at about the same time.
And about the same length of time, because yeah. I left there about 89 and went into corporate sales for another Fortune 500 company. But Greg was there as well. He was a software engineer. And then I was an accountant. I was internal audit and cost accounting and that sort of thing. But what a great place to start, though, right, Bill?
Oh, yeah. You know, if I think back about that start, I learned so much about quality software, rigor. And, you know, back then, everything had to be done according to a standard and probably overkill for most commercial applications. But, you know, we were writing software for cruise missiles, and the cruise missile has to hit the target.
Yes.
And one of the engineering challenges, without getting too technical, was that it was real-time software. And so when you think of, like, programs, there's all these little programs that run to take data from the atmosphere and to control the wings and the surfaces and, you know, how high you are and such. And every little program has to run within a certain amount of time. So it, like, one little program had to run in 100 milliseconds. And I really learned about constraints, limitations, precisions, and really innovation, how to make it work within the constraints. I kind of joked to people I was a rocket scientist, and I didn't write the math, but I programmed the math.
Right.
So I learned a lot about the importance of the details and testing and getting it right. And that was really good. But I think ultimately I craved business world. In fact, after a couple of years at McDonnell Douglas, I thought, you know, I'd really like to go on the business side. And I think back then it was called data processing, or it wasn't called IT back then. And I didn't have the skills. I didn't know COBOL. And so I couldn't do that. But I started really getting this craving to move into commercial IT. And so then I started kind of aiming in that direction and heading down that path.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, you know, you've worked in avionics, missiles, logistics, because you had a 20 plus year illustrious career at Enterprise, lots of different places. But what is the common thread? Is there a common thread, Bill, that you kind of saw through all of those that, you know, you've been able to take into every role?
For me, the common thread is anticipating what's coming and wanting to be part of that. And so I think early on, I was always nervous about being in a job where I wouldn't be able to do new things. I'd have to do the same thing. And I think some people like that. They like the stability of maintaining software or just being in a cycle. But I've had a lot of jobs since my childhood, and I think it's always the curiosity about what can be done next, what's coming. And I think one of my biggest strengths was anticipating what's coming and looking for ways to enable the business through what's coming. And you know, in some cases you have to look at, is it feasible yet?
Yes.
Especially when I was at Enterprise, I was always, number one, trying to make sure I understood the business, understand the customer experience, understand how the business works, how does the business make money, and then looking at all the technologies that are not just with us, but that are coming, and how can we increase the value of what we're doing, and really address the goals and mission of the company through technology. And so that's sort of the common thread, is always looking for that.
Yeah. Well, that is a critical skill, being able to look around the bend, right? And that's where you really move more into strategic role than just execution, right?
Yeah.
So having a seat at the table. Well, I know that you spent 20 years at Enterprise. Do you have one big takeaway? And then I want to talk about pods. I want to spend just a little bit of time on each of those.
Yeah.
Is there a big takeaway?
You know, I think probably the biggest takeaway, and it's so simple, but it's also so powerful. And it's something that Jack Taylor said. And if you worked at Enterprise or you work, you know this, is that take really good care of your customer. Take really good care of your employees, and everything takes care of itself. The profits will come. And I think there's so many companies, especially public companies, they're chasing profit. There's all this pressure on the quarterly earnings. And I think one of the things I really enjoyed about Enterprise as a privately held company, it was like, let's just do the right things and everything will take care of itself. And you see that's played out for them even into this day.
Yeah. You know, I love Jack Taylor and Andy Taylor. I still quote Andy Taylor on certain things. But when Greg and I started Technology Partners 31 years ago, Bill, that was our philosophy. We said, if we take good care of our people will take care of our customers, and then our success will follow. And it needs to be in that order. Right? It really does. So empowering your people, taking good care of them, and then they're going to take care of the customer. So I love that. Well, you were the CIO at Pods. Was there a transformation that you led the company through that you're really proud of? Or, what were some of your big accomplishments when you were at Pods?
Yeah, I think one of the things is the IT culture, I think, would be one. Which it's not a business transformation, it was a culture transformation.
Mm-hmm.
And so if it's okay to talk about that, and then we can certainly talk about the business. But I think, if you don't have an effective culture, it's hard to do anything else. You know, if you've got people that aren't getting along, or they're infighting, or, because what was happening, and I think this is fairly common in many companies, is that everybody cares about what they do. But if they don't see how they're aligned around the bigger purpose,
yes,
there can be finger pointing and infighting and withholding information, and that's not just at Pods. That's really everywhere, depending on where you look. It can be the case.
Absolutely.
And so one of the first things that we did is we said, we are one team. I don't care which area, within the IT organization, we are one team. And we even had a couple of guys, they came up with a mantra, one team, one fight. And that became sort of our tagline. And we went from a place where, quite frankly, a lot of people in the community, the IT professionals, didn't want to come there. And, because there was, sort of the word on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And, in relatively short order, it was a place that everybody was trying to get in. Everybody wanted to come.
Oh.
And we were, we were doing a lot we did a lot with introducing, Agile, Scrum, DevOps. We had brought on Bill Bensing, who was from St. Louis, he's down in Florida now, and just brilliant technology professional. And we did some pretty amazing things there. And then, of course, we did a lot. We worked very closely with marketing, you know, around upgrading e-commerce, and then really trying to improve the routing system. And, you know, one of the things that would be fun now, if I was still there, was implementing AI, because with AI, and you think of logistics and all the moving parts that go along with logistics and moving containers around, I think there's a great opportunity there. But Pods, you know, what a great company, and what they're doing, brilliant business model. And I really enjoyed my time there. And I was fortunate to work there with John Cope, who was a great CEO, a great leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, Bill, it all starts with the culture. There's a reason that Drucker said culture eats strategy for breakfast, right? It's so important. And, you know, the organization has a culture. Uh-huh. The organization has its own culture, but I say technology has its culture too. And so as the technology leader, you want to be able to attract the best and the brightest, right? So it's so important to keep your eye on that ball, I think. So I love that. I love that. Well, you're coaching now. You're coaching other executives. So I would love just for you to tell me a little bit. You've consulted, you've been a CIO, you've been an executive. How has that prepared you? I'm sure you've got so many lessons in your tool belt and tools that you've developed, but how's that really prepared you, Bill, to coach other executives?
Yeah, there's so many experiences there to bring to the table, right? And the thing that I really enjoy right now is I bring a lot of experiences, a lot of scars, you know, a lot of setbacks and learning that I can bring to each person. Combined with, I've studied like the science of coaching. And so, you know, I realized in 2003 that I would want to be a coach someday. Kind of like when I was a little kid, I wanted to be a guitar player.
Yeah.
when I hired my first coach in 2003 and studied, you know, sort of the discourse. And then so combining that with the experience, I'm really able to bring together the science of coaching, the leadership experience together to help people. And I realized a long time ago that our business skills and our technical skills get us to a certain point, and it's just not common sense for everybody on how to become an executive, to how to operate at that next level. And some people figure it out. Some people get they're fortunate to have a good mentor inside a company. And I was fortunate to have mentors and a coach. But to get that help in the area of executive communication, relationship development, emotional intelligence, and we do a lot, not just with emotions, but with moods. They're related, but they're different. Mm-hmm. And bringing those together, helping people really rise to that next level. So I think people that I work with that can combine what we're teaching and how we're helping with their own internal mentoring, if they get it, is really a lot of jet fuel to help them move quickly up the ranks.
Oh, I love that. Jet fuel. I love that. You know what I love that you just said? You said you hired a coach.
Oh, yeah.
I think you said in 2003.
Yeah.
How did you see that help you gain executive presence and move to that executive, position that you were in? I mean, what were some of the things that you learned, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was exposed to sort of the neuroscience of coaching and the biology of cognition and linguistics early on. It wasn't sort of a traditional coaching program. It was very targeted to the aspects of being human. And so I learned a lot about how people perceive, what the concerns of people are. I learned a lot about emotions, learned a lot about how we use language. And this is an area that I do a lot with. And that if you think, Lisa, about what we do every day as a leader, if you think about what do you do all day? Well, there's one thing that you and I would do all day, and that is we talk.
Yes.
And we don't just talk. We use language to get things done. And so in our program, we talk about language constructs like making requests. And there's a certain way to make a complete effective request, which we call delegation. And then in response to a request, we would hope that the person is going to respond to make a commitment or a promise. And what we teach people and work with people on is how to make a complete effective request and get a complete effective commitment to that. And then there's an agreement and a shared understanding so that the two people can move forward in a healthy way without micromanagement, without, you know, lots of follow-up. And what I've just these two constructs of requesting and committing, which I had learned from my coach, sounds so simple, but people can be so sloppy with it. And we, when we get rigorous with that, we get trust goes up, the amount of rework goes down, the amount of follow-up goes down. And we become so much more, our relationships better, our performance gets better, our results get better. And again, it sounds so simple, but when we really name it and work together on that, life at work and at home even can get much better.
Yeah, that's so good. Well, so many of challenges, right? I would say that so many of the challenges that we experience, Bill, is because there was poor communication.
Right.
That there was either... not understanding, or the language that we were using just was not clear. There was not clarity. And so I love that. Now, is this whole, I'm just going to ask you, is this whole mode of coaching that you're talking about the ontological?
Yes. Yes.
Yes. That's what it's called, the ontological, in case our listeners want to go and study that a little bit more. Well, can I ask you this question? Because you've coached a lot of people. What is a common blind spot? Because we all have them, right? And sometimes it's a blind spot, and it's called a blind spot for a reason, because we're blind to it many times, right?
Yeah.
But what is a common blind spot that you have seen in leaders that, that you know, maybe that you've helped maybe overcome or to even see to know how to move past?
Yeah, I think one is people assume what other people think and want. And they also, and one of the assumptions they make are other people's intentions.
Mm.
And so when, and I think it's sort of human nature to assume somebody's intentions, but I see so much harm that happens from that. I had a leader, CEO of my eye doctor, Sue Downs. She used to have on the top of her agenda, assume the best intentions. And I love that because we, even though we all want the same thing, humans can sometimes say things and do things with good intentions, but people could be assuming not good intentions. And so one of the big things that I help people with is to seek a shared understanding.
Mm-hmm.
If there's just two words that I could leave anybody with, it's make sure you have a shared understanding. Because people will say in business, okay, good, we're aligned. It's like, are you sure you're aligned? And what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the world we live in, everybody's in a hurry. It's go, 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 go. We're urgent. We got to move quick. And getting a shared understanding can take time. It means we have to sit down. We have to talk. We have to go back and forth and make sure our interpretations are consistent. And then we can say we have a shared understanding. And I think that would be one of the blind spots, assuming that you have a shared understanding when you don't. Because if you don't, there's going to be rework. There can be waste. And
yes.
So I think that's an important thing.
That is so good. That is a golden nugget right there, the shared understanding. And to your point, it takes time. So, but you may be spending more time on the front end of that, Bill, but in the long run, the totality of the picture, you're going to save time.
Yeah.
And trust, like you said, goes up. And I think about Covey that says you lead at the speed of trust, right? So as trust goes up, you're going to lead faster. But how do you build that? That is so good. Well, let me ask you this. You compare coding to leadership sometimes, you know, they require clear, specific, concise language.
Yeah.
And we just kind of talked about that, you know, is there anything else that you'd want to say on that?
Well, one thing that I would say is I don't think most people understand the power of language. and we can make it simple. You know, there's only, like, if I followed you around all day, Lisa, and I said, what are the different structures that Lisa uses as a leader? Well, she makes declarations. We're going to go here. We're going to do that. I'm going to write a book. We're going to go into this market. We're going to start selling this. And language is generative. It's creative. You know, if you think in the beginning was the word and the word, it's like everything is created with the word. We create everything with language. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the things. And then we make judgments with language. We make assessments. And a lot of times people make judgments and assessments, but there's no evidence, there's no grounding. And so one of the other things we teach is grounding whatever assessment you make with assertions, with evidence, so that we can believe that we have the truth as good as we know it. And so, and I've just in business, so many people make ungrounded assessments and it can break trust. It can cause problems. And so there's other things, but those are the two I would highlight.
Oh, that's so good. Well, I've got so many more questions for you, Bill, but we need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Bill Tingle on the Something Extra podcast.
Hey there. In a challenging business climate like this, savvy leaders look to technology to find an edge. This can mean the difference between staying ahead of the curve or playing catch up. It's time to collaborate with the highly skilled experts at Technology Partners. Our team of technologists draws upon decades of experience for your project, with each bringing a passion for solving problems and a track record of success. How can we help you overcome your biggest technology challenges? Visit technologypartners.net to book a free consultation with one of our leaders.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with my friend, Bill Tingle. So, Bill, what I hear, the buzzword that is on everybody's lips today is AI.
Yes.
So tell me what you think about AI. You already said that with pods. I mean, it'd be awesome to see how AI is going to help in the logistics. You know, tell me what you think about it, and then tell me what skills you think AI is not going to replace, because I know that that is top of mind for everybody too. You know, they're thinking, oh my goodness, AI is going to take my job. And the reality is, the hard truth is, it is going to take some jobs. But don't be scared of that. You just need to reskill to do something different, right? But tell me your philosophy on AI.
You know, I in many ways, I think of AI as yet another technology. You know, if you think about it, you know, I remember, let's go back to the PC and you know, someone, when the PC came out, some people used it to store their recipes, their family photos. You know, they would maybe keep lists of things. And other people used PCs for accounting and automating things, controlling devices. And so the PC was revolutionary in terms of what it gave, the capabilities. And then fast forward to today with AI, and you think about how we're using mathematics and algorithms and what it can do in terms of giving people more capacity, giving people more power so that we can do other things and really flourish even more. And so I think I remember years ago when I worked at Rockwell International, this is a long time ago, they had facilities where there was no humans. It was all robots. And so this phenomenon of technology taking jobs has been around for a long time. I think there's a lot more hype with it now, but I also think there's a lot of reality. What I think is amazing, Lisa, is the amount of capacity it gives us, because we're always wanting more capacity. If you think about the science of time management, it's about getting more capacity. And so for me, I think about, as a solopreneur, you know, Karina, my wife and I, we work together. You know, we have a few people sort of that help out. But the amount that we get done with AI today, it's incredible. I mean, I can get done in less than a half an hour with AI. I still have a job. It's just that AI has given me more capacity. And so I think and we were using forms of it back in enterprise. I mean, we did like amazing high value things with it back then. And so I see it as a tool and I see it as an enabler. And I think just like other technology that comes before, I think we all should be inspired to learn what we need to learn and stay, like, ride the wave so we can flourish with it, not fear it. And so that's definitely a philosophy that I have. And just the one thing, I was looking at some data the other day, and not every company is AI centric, right? Not every company is a software platform, but we're getting close to seeing a one-person $1 billion company. Imagine one person writing AI software, generating $1 billion. We're approaching that. There's a list of the top AI centric company. I forget how many they're on the list, but the average team size is 27 people. The average revenue for a 30, like let's take Telegram, the software company, there's 30 employees. They're generating $1 billion a year. And the average revenue for employee is 2.5 million. And there'll always be larger corporations where that doesn't apply. But what that signals to me is the power of it and how we all need to be aware of that power. And even if we're working in a major corporation, how do we work together to get more capacity, to keep learning, to keep growing, to keep innovating? And if we don't fear it, but we embrace it and grow with it, I mean, it can be a lot of fun. And we can have a lot of fun in this time we have to have a career.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. I loved everything you said. Here's the word that I kept hearing. So, listeners, more capacity. Capacity. Mm-hmm. And who does not want more time in their day? Mm-hmm. Right? Bill, I mean, I hear that from people all the time. Oh, my goodness. You know, I just need more time. Well, this is a way that you can get more time. The other thing I love, and I'm thinking it's a great book title for
can
you.
Can I use it?
Flourish, not fear. Flourish,
like
not
that.
Fear. Yeah, or flourish over fear. You know, you could say, I'm just giving you an idea. Flourish, line, fear. You know, flourish over fear. So there you go. There you go. Get to work. Get to work, Bill.
Thank you for that gift.
I'm just going to tell our listeners, I'm just going to encourage our listeners. I don't want to tell. I want to encourage them. Speaking of the art of language, Bill like puts awesome stuff out on LinkedIn. Go follow him. I love reading your posts and your blogs and that you put out there, Bill. But you and your wife, you call yourself digital nomads, and I love this. Your lifestyle. You kind of travel around different places, and we were so blessed to have you. Are you in St. Louis right now?
Yes.
Or where you are? Okay. Because in August, you were in St. Louis and you and I were on a panel together. But tell me, what has this taught you about leadership, Bill?
Oh, boy. So much. I mean, it's been 2 months now, and it's been way more fulfilling and enjoyable in 2 months than I thought it was going to be. And the only downside is I can't be guaranteed the kind of office that I want. You know, at home, I had a very comfortable office. But it's taught me a lot about, probably the first thing that comes to mind, Lisa, is asking for help. You know, I think so many of us grew up in a culture where we need to be independent. It's not okay to ask for help, or we don't, or we're scolded for asking for help. You know, you think about school, mm-hmm. You know, do your work, you know, get your work done. You know, don't look on Susie's paper, or, you know, and which clearly cheating is not acceptable, but,
right.
but asking for help because, mm-hmm. You know, we're going into a new area, we're planning, you know, we're asking people for, you know, asking for directions, asking for, and so I've learned, you know, to ask more. And if we don't get help, we're not going to flourish as more. We're not going to have as good of a life. You know, I remember watching a video years ago and Jack Welch was talking about the help that he gets. And I think that was one of the first times I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, I need to, you know, everybody's helping each other and make sure you ask. So that was a big thing. I think planning, you know, really planning, because if you're leaving a home and everything you have is in your car,
mm-hmm.
and you're not going back for a while, you know, making sure you really thought things through and planning. And I tell you what, my wife, Karina, she's a masterful project manager. Like she had even from the point of selling things, to storing, and we gave a lot of stuff away. So it was a great opportunity to get, and she had a lot of things people wanted to have. Like, we just gave so much away, which was, that felt really nice to help other people in that regard. But just the planning and making sure everything. And the last thing I would say is the thing that we both enjoy the most is when we live in a home for a long time, same city, driving the same place, everything becomes automatic.
Yeah.
When you go into a new area, you have to be very aware, conscious, you're thinking, you're using your brain a lot more. And as you know, I've always thought as I age, I want to use my brain more and more, not less and less. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are some things that come to mind.
That is so good. I've never thought about that before, but when you are in one place, you're a little bit on autopilot sometimes. And sometimes we need to take ourselves off of autopilot, right, Bill? I love that, because you probably have new creative ideas and all sorts of things. Goodness gracious. Well, I do want to talk about this because I know this is super, super important to you. And it is to me as well. You know that I grew up music. People thought I would major in music. I ended up like you. It's like, okay, well, I'm not sure, do I want to be a starving artist or do I want to be able to pay my bills? So I went accounting. But you've played the guitar since you were 7.
Yeah.
How has that, and I know that it shaped you in so many ways with creativity and discipline and the discipline of practice, but tell me a little bit more about that.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk about it, because it is, it is core to my being. And I think music's core to everybody's being. But I was fortunate when I was 7 that my mom asked if I wanted to take guitar lessons. And she asked I have 2 brothers. She asked each of us. And I was the only one that said yes. And I said yes, quite frankly and honestly, because I wanted to please her, because I thought she wanted me to play. But secondly, my grandfather played. Like, my grandfather would play and sing on the radio. In fact, he would sing country Western music and he would yodel. And I loved hearing, because he had this big voice, I loved hearing him. So I was really inspired. But I think the first thing that I learned was not quitting. Not quitting. Because there were so many times I wanted to quit, when things got tough or I didn't feel like it. And so I think I learned to not quit. I learned to do it when I don't feel like it. To me, that's a big part of discipline, is doing something when you don't feel like it. And we all have that. I don't feel like going to the gym. I don't feel like doing this. And then I think the last thing I would throw in is the discipline of staying with something until it's complete. And that can lead to like an extreme of perfectionism, but like breaking things down and working on each part so that it is complete and successful. And that applies to so much in life as far as that goes.
Right. Well, I also just think about the fundamentals of music, right? Bill, I'm thinking you're learning to play piano, you play scales over and over and over, which can become monotonous,
yeah.
Right? But it's that laying that good foundation. Well, you and I, we had something really fun in August with the HMGC IO Summit, and you were on the panel, and we talked about the relationship between technology, IT, and music. And there were so many correlations that we talked about.
Yeah, there is. I mean, there's a lot of correlations with math, which we won't get into here. But if you think about all of the technology computers that are used in the music world, it's because they're both math-based. If you think about frequency and amplitude of volume, and so there's that correlation. But I learned early on how to coordinate with other people. So I was in my, even when I was like 8, my music teacher brought guitarists together and we would practice improvising, the best we could at the age of 8. And I remember that day, the first time I did it, I thought, this is really cool. Like, we're listening to each other and that person just did this. And so now I'm going to do this, and like really listening to each other and coordinating and trying to create something as a group and everybody's contributing. I mean, that I was exposed to that at the age of 8 for early on. And I think the other thing that comes to mind, which was just a cool moment, I don't think I mentioned this at the summit. When I was in high school, I had a really good jazz instructor, and He mentored me in leadership and in music. And I won All-State Jazz Guitar Player my junior and senior year. And then I was offered a scholarship. And that went on to my dad and I talking about music versus engineering, which is a
right.
But I remember we got our high school jazz band got to warm up for Count Basie. And if people don't know who Count Basie is, he's a legend. You can look him up. And he's just known for like a master of a big band. And my jazz instructor said, "Hey, Bill, I want you to go into the locker room and I want you to grab a chord sitting on the table." And so I went in there, I'm looking around, I can't see it. And all of a sudden I realized Count Basie's right in front of me sitting down and it's just him and me. And I was so nervous, I couldn't talk. And he said, he just looked at me. He goes, "You want to know something?" I said, "Yeah, of course I want to know something." He said, "The most important thing in music is the rests." And for those of you that don't know the music, that's silence. The rests in music is silence. And that taught me so much about life in terms of, like, when I play, you don't need to play all the time. The spaces, it's just like in a painting, the white space is what gives the art what it is. And when we're communicating, the silence and listening, and we don't have to be talking nonstop, and uncomfortable pauses can become comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I think that was really helpful in terms of just like really listening and appreciating what everybody else is doing.
That is, I've never heard that either, but I'm just thinking, I just spoke yesterday to a group of people about the rhythms and seasons in our life and how important rest is for a leader. Right. Yeah. And so, wow. I don't know. There may be another book in there. Oh my goodness. Well, I want to ask you just real quickly, and I've got a few more questions and then we'll talk about something extra. With your coaching, how do you, is there like someone that you coach where you just saw like a light bulb moment and a breakthrough? How did that make you feel? I can only surmise how that would make you feel. Just, have you seen like some, how do you measure the success? How do you know that you're doing your job?
Yeah, that's, you know, I got goosebumps just as you were saying that, because it brought back some memories already. And that's, it's really why I do what I do. You know, I think I certainly could have gone and done other things after exiting my CIO role to make more money or do, you know, but my deep purpose is to help people reach levels that they never thought they could. And, you know, one example is if somebody started out with me as an individual contributor and all of a sudden they're a CISO, CISO, and they reach back out to me and they say, "Thank you, Bill." Mm-hmm. I had one person that was wanting to get promoted and to a VP level. And I got a note one Monday morning and said, "Bill, I just want to thank you. I came to work, found out I got a promotion to vice president. I got a 35% increase raise. I got equity. And I couldn't have done it without you." Uh-huh. And then the last one I would share, which it's one of those that really gave me goosebumps when it happened, is I was working with a client, brilliant engineering leader in a pharmaceutical company. And he had, came from India, and was seeking to be citizenship in the country. And he was living with this fear of losing his job, but he was doing really well, but there was this fear of losing his job. And so it was blocking him from speaking up and taking chances. And I finally said, "Well, I thought you had your green card." He said, "Yeah, I got it last month." And he was so gripped in the habitual paradigm of not having his green card and living in this fear that when he got the green card, it didn't flip the switch for him. Mm-hmm. And he and I sat there, I kid you not, it felt like 10 minutes in silence. And he just had this major breakthrough. And it sounds like so simple, like why wouldn't, but we just don't realize how gripped we can be in our subconscious with our emotions and our stories. And for me, that always stands out as something that I got to be a part of that. And he's just thriving now. Just such a
Oh, that is, yeah. I mean, that is your why. That's your why, Bill. So, okay. So do you have a book? What do you read? How do you grow yourself? Is there a book or a podcast besides Something Extra that you listen to that really?
Yeah. I mean, I'm always listening. I'm always reading, and it's the, and I can't wait to read your book. So that's my plug for your book, Something Extra. And I'm so excited. And I heard that there's a big shipment arriving someplace today. So
there is.
That is really exciting. I'm so happy for you.
Very exciting.
Yeah. I'm so excited for you. Every meeting, somebody's recommending a book. So I'm always reading. I do focus on the spiritual. And so for me, that's really important. And then I also focus on books that help me do what I do. And I read a lot of books on mindset because everything begins with mindset.
Yes.
And I don't think people realize how stuck they are and how much resistance they have to taking the actions that they know will help them because their mindset is them stuck. So I'm sort of reading a lot in that space.
Is there one particular book that you would tell our listeners go get?
Yeah, the one book that, especially if you're in leadership, and the cool thing about this is this book has material that was at one time you couldn't find it, and it's in the ontological designs, the ontological space, but it's written in a very accessible way, and it's written by two people I would call friends that are pioneers in space. It's co-authored. The one person is Chalmers Brothers, which is a cool name, Chalmers, Chalmers Brothers. And then a very good friend of mine, Vinay Kumar, they co-wrote it. And the book is called Language and the Pursuit of Leadership Excellence.
Mm.
And I ask all my clients to get a copy. And
it's awesome.
And you know, one of the things it does is that we become better observers of ourselves as leaders. And I think when people become better observers of themselves, they become better leaders.
Oh. No doubt. Another word for that is self-awareness.
Yeah, exactly.
It really, yes. Yeah. But
I heard a statement this morning. I still have a coach, and my coach was talking this morning about knowledge plus understanding equals self-awareness.
Equals awareness.
Yeah. Like we don't know what we don't know until we learn it, and then we do it, and then we become observers of how we're doing it.
So good. Well, Bill, this is called Something Extra. What do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think every leader needs to care about each person's dreams. And if it's okay to tell just a quick story.
Love it.
One of the things that I've done in the past, and I did it at Pods, is I began by telling my story and what my dreams were. And then at every all hands meeting, anybody could volunteer to tell their story. And I did it myself first to just set an example and to be known. And each, you know, people started raising their hand. They would tell their story and they would tell their dreams. And at the end of the person telling their story, I would tell everybody, you know, we had maybe 100 people. I would say, we are here to support John's dreams. And if we mess up John at work, we're messing up his dream.
Mm.
And so we need to work together. We need to understand each other, not just what our jobs are and what we do and how we do them and what we need and what a good handoff is and what a shared understanding is. We need to understand each other's dreams, and we're supporting each other. And Lisa, the coolest thing, I said the word John. John's dream was to have a bee farm and to make honeycomb. He'll sell honey and have children come and teach him about bees. And he left, and that's what he's doing.
Oh, I love that. Yeah. Is he here in Missouri? Because no, we love honey.
Yeah, he's in Florida.
He's in Florida. Yeah. Okay.
In fact, when we, that's going to be part of our digital nomad. We're going to stop and see his bees.
Yeah. Yay. Oh, gosh. Wow. So you're a dream maker too. Or the people you encourage other people to help other people.
Think about why do we work?
Because we all have dreams.
And mm-hmm. doing our work can be joyful and fun and fulfilling, and part of the dream, but we all have a dream. You know, if you have somebody, you know, people say, well, if I won the lottery, I would do this. Well, that's what the dream is.
Yeah. Bill, oh my goodness. I think I could talk to you for 10 hours. But I know that this is going to help our listeners. Thank you so, so much for making the time to be on the show today. And I just appreciate your friendship for a long time now. Yeah. We've been friends.
Likewise, Lisa, I just want to thank you. And the one thing I would say is I really admire and appreciate and respect your role model as a leader, as a mother, as a wife, a community member. And when I see you and Greg together and what you're both doing as a couple and the road you've been down in your whole life, it's a real treasure to know you two and be called your friend.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for that. Well, have a great rest of the day, Bill.
Okay, you too.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.